I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, you doing?
Hello.
That's the intro?
Yeah.
Do it properly.
Hello. Oh, you want me to say the intro?
Yeah, it's close to do.
Okay. Hello, everyone. And welcome to Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by the good people at King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street, or kingscomics.com.
And I'm Levins.
And he's Levins. And I'm Siobhan.
it's pretty good. Pretty good. Comic book podcast that we host every single week. We review all the comics that came out last week, let you know what we thought of them. There were a lot of comics last week, Siobhan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired.
Same.
I'm too tired to do an intro properly.
Yeah, same.
And we begin every episode by reviewing all of the number one issues that came out in the last week. And that's how we're going to do this episode right now.
Good.
First things first is the name of the segment. We review all the number one issues that came out last week. And the first of which I'm going to talk about is Black Hammer Age of Doom. Came out through Dark Horse Comics. It is the continuation of the Black Hammer series, written by Jeff Lemire with returning artist Dean Ormston, colors by Dave Stewart, letters by Todd Klein. This has been a long time favorite book for Serious Issues since we started the podcast, and it's had many little spin-off mini-series, but the main series has been on hiatus, and it was very exciting to see this back on the stack.
Absolutely. And I like that. I said I like, but I'm not sure how I feel about the sort of numbering it as separate sort of graphic novel.
I think that is what Dark Horse kind of do with a lot of their series.
That's true.
Namely Hellboy, BRPD.
They've started doing it with Usagi as well.
Yeah. I think it's just a smart way to do things.
That, true.
You know, they've been getting away with it for years without anyone outcrying on the internet. So why start now?
True.
And this is, like, even though this is a direct continuation of the story, there is a kind of side, like, I guess the A story here follows one of the characters who is not some of the... Basically, Black Hammer is about a bunch of superheroes from, like, the kind of, like, alternate reality Silver Age hero sphere that get displaced from their Earth and have to live in this podunk little town. They can't escape it. There's a force field that stops them from leaving this town. And they all want to leave and they can't. But there's mysterious forces at play. And Black Hammer was one of the heroes who came to this weird dimension with them. And he died. And his daughter has been looking into his disappearance. And she
from the original universe.
And she managed to find her way to where everyone is stuck in Black Hammer. And so this is a direct continuation of the first series. However, it follows this daughter who we know more of thanks to a mini series that came out last year. This is kind of like, I guess the Age of Doom refers to, like, I guess Jeff Lemire's take on the Doom Patrol is what you kind of got from this. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely, this book is like extremely referential of different superhero stuff. I would say almost like, especially DC. Like, it doesn't really have that much to do with the ages of Marvel comics.
Black Hammer, Thor.
Yeah, true, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, this seems very referential of like 90s Vertigo and Hellboy and Doom Patrol and stuff like that, which is fun.
Definitely
fun. Fun era of comics for me.
Super fun. And look, I don't think this really deserves to be in a number one because it was a direct continuation of the story. But the new path that the daughter is kind of flung into definitely feels like a big tonal shift. Ends up in a bar that she can't leave. So she's in a new place that she can't leave that's surrounded by like all kinds of quirky D-list oddity heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Not in her heroes. They're just weird people with powers and afflictions, mutations, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, who knows where this series is going to go next, which one's going to focus on. But there's the middle page spread is the most dark horse this book has ever looked.
Mm, absolutely.
And
spooky villains.
Real good stuff.
Absolutely.
So, I assume most of you listening already read Black Hammer, in which case, how good is it to have this book back?
Great. Extremely good.
If you haven't read it yet and you're like, oh, a new number one, don't jump aboard with this.
No.
It's a really silly idea.
Yeah. I don't think this would make much sense without having read the other series.
Yeah, exactly.
But go back and read the other series.
Because it's great.
It's very good.
It won an Eisner Award.
Good on them.
None of the other number ones this week won an Eisner Award. but we're going to talk about them anyway. Image put out a new number one this week that was called Skyward. And it was written by Joe Henderson with art by Lee Garbett with colors by Antonio Fabella and Simon Bowland on letters. This was an incredible example of just a really, really simple concept.
Mm-hmm.
Just a perfect first issue that just sets up the world and introduces you to, like, honestly, two characters within it.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, what a great idea. And I'm on board for this series.
It's a pretty silly idea. It's like, what if gravity turned off?
Yep. So
that's
one
basically it, right?
Yep. We have a prologue in which we see a young family with one baby daughter kind of starting their day. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly there's no gravity. And the father of the couple, mm-hmm. He is a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I told him it would happen one day. Mm. But then realizes that he'd just said goodbye to his wife out the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And goodbye, wife.
Goodbye, wife.
Then we cut to the future, 20 years from that point where the gravity turns off, which is now referred to as G-Day.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the daughter of that couple who is now acting as a messenger,
mm-hmm.
Who basically moves throughout this new no-gravity Earth,
mm-hmm.
using a gun to propel herself from mm-hmm. one place to another quite dangerously. She's sick of living in Chicago and kind of wants to move.
Wants to get out, wants to travel the world.
Yeah.
But you can't because there's no fucking gravity.
Yeah.
Nightmare.
It's I loved this. This was just like, hell yeah, comic books. Stupid concepts.
Yep.
Done really well.
Silly. Big scale. Good. Great art. Nice colors.
Yeah, just, bam. Yeah. I'm really on board with this series.
Totally.
It was so nice to get a number one that didn't go like, okay, like, you know, they're going to do a lot of really slow world building in this issue.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, it'll be good by the end. You got to slog through this. This was such a fun, breezy, mm-hmm. like just, I mean, the it's a five word pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Book.
Yeah, yeah. Gravity turns off. Booyah. Fuck. yeah.
Good
so
fun.
Good.
I liked it.
Yeah. Fuck, I just realized that I meant to do a joke at the beginning of the episode and say, welcome to the 1,000th episode of Serious Issues.
That would have been really good if you had.
Oh, well. But you did a great You did a great show, too.
Thank you.
So that was Skyward through Image Books. That's definitely my favorite number one of the week because Black Hammer Age of Doom doesn't really count. We also got from Black Mask another story about a weird alternate version of the future.
I didn't read this.
And a messenger. This one was called Survival Fetish, and it is written by Patrick Kinlan with art by Antonio Fuso, who I think did James Bond, maybe?
Okay. Oh, that sounds
James
familiar.
Bond, is that right? This book is about, it's a black and white comic. Mm-hmm. Fuso has very kind of stylized kind of, Euro artwork, I guess. Mm-hmm. This book is about... in the future, for some reason, there are snipers.
Okay.
All the time. And no one goes outside because you'll get sniped.
Cool. Nightmare.
But there are runners.
Okay.
And our protagonist in this book is a runner who basically runs things from one part of the city to another. Okay. And he gets shot in this book, but it's just a graze and he just picks back up and keeps running.
Right.
So he's, one of the few that kind of brave enough to go outside and avoid the sniper fire.
Why are there snipers?
I don't know. It's not really explained. It is hinted at, and I don't want to, it's a big, like, oh shit twist that kind of changes everything.
Right. Okay.
At the end, like, I was like, this is so stupid reading it. Like, what a, why are there sniper rifle all the time? What, this is so dumb. But it was, you know, quite well written from a character point of view. You know, he has a relationship with the daughter of one of the kind of higher ups at one of the families that he works for. And their relationship was, like, pretty funny and good to read about. But there's a big twist at the end that kind of suddenly paints this would-be hero in a completely different light at the end of the issue. You want to know?
Yeah.
So he works for, or he basically pays off snipers to shoot at him or pretend that they're shooting at him. So maybe everyone who is avoiding the sniper fire, like, have been lied to. And that I don't know what the overall motive is, why people are paying other people to shoot them. He basically makes money by delivering things from family to family, by braving the outside world, but he's the one paying people to shoot at him to make it seem like it's a threat, I guess.
Right. Well, that's
I would recommend this. That twist was pretty crazy, and I think that means that the next issue is going to be very different from this first one. But we love alternate weird future danger threat things. Don't wish them on.
That is a thing that I love.
Survival Fetish out through Black Mask Comics, who, you know, very rarely steer us wrong in terms of new series.
Cool.
Aftershock this week put out a book called Her Infernal Descent. It was written by Lonnie Nadler.
And Zach Thompson.
Put Lonnie Nadler in the list of great names in comics.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And art by Kyle Charles with colors by Dee Kniff. And this was about an old lady whose family is stuck in hell.
Cool.
And so she gets help, or kind of help, from the poet, the dead poet, William Blake. Right?
Yep.
Yep, William Blake.
And he's like, let's go down to hell and save your family for no reason. Yeah. She's like, yeah, all right, I haven't got anything better to do. And then they go to hell. And I think the strangest part of this book is how unfazed she is by this whole experience. And I understand that's supposed to be like a bit of a character choice. Like, she's a bit like, no, I'm...
this shit again.
I'm so sad because my family's dead and I have to go save them.
But how much worse could it get?
Yeah.
Oh, hell, I don't care.
Just makes it seem really like low stakes and kind of uninteresting.
Yeah. I also like when she gets to hell, or, you know, the afterlife, it's only celebrities.
Yeah.
Like, and literary celebrities at that.
The first people she meets is like Plato and Aristotle, and they're all obsessed with like whether people are still talking about their shit.
That was like the one thing
I think is like,
oh, but I liked that.
Yeah.
I liked that. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But then like everyone else is just all like literary greats, you know, from your obvious to your less obvious, and then suddenly musicians. So Hendrix and Lennon are there too.
Yeah, that's what I think it's like. My main problem with this, like, I like the concept. I like that for once, like, a little old lady is the hero of a book. That's cool.
Yeah, I really enjoy the art too.
But there was like zero character. Like, she's just, you just get what you see from her visually, and we understand that her family's dead, but like there's sort of nothing.
I thought a lot of character came from the art, but I think she's kind of like bombarded by William Blake talking in rhyme all the time, and
which is very annoying.
Extremely annoying.
Also, you really are going to struggle when you have someone who's like a famous poet to write in their voice, like, unless you are as smart and as talented as that poet. And I don't necessarily know if Lonnie Nadler is.
Yeah, because throughout, it could be Zach Thompson who isn't.
Could
well.
Also be Zach Thompson.
Don't just throw Lonnie under the bus.
Sorry.
He speaks in rhyme that the writers have written for the most part, and then there's one moment where he says a direct quote from one of his actual writings, and it's completely different to the dialogue.
Yeah,
that he's been saying. It's like, oh, you didn't really nail his voice then.
Yeah,
for me to be able to tell from that small amount, but.
Also, why would he always speak in rhyme?
He's not Etrigan. Oh, no, you speak in rhyme as a way to offer yourself passage to the afterlife or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to be continuing with this series.
Probably me neither.
But I really liked the art. Fellas. Kyle Charles's art was excellent.
Yeah, the art was great.
Really, really good. And did a lot of the legwork that the dialogue wasn't doing as well, I don't think.
Yep, absolutely.
Also, this was one of two books this week that had a quote from the Divine Comedy, that band, the Divine Comedy, in it. This one said, "I did not die, and yet I lost life's breath."
I don't
know that band at all, but it was just weird to see them quoted in two books this week.
Yeah, it's not a band.
Isn't it?
It's from the book, The Divine Comedy by Dante.
There's a band called The Divine Comedy,
too. Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why I was like, why the fuck are they quoting that weird band called The Divine Comedy?
And why are their songs so like formal and prosaic? That's so weird.
Yeah, okay. All right, you win in this round, Shakespeare School.
Finally. Finally, it's paying off.
Siobhan's number one stack is empty, so sorry. I'm going to have to guide you through these books that I read. Zenoscope put out a book called The Mainstream, which is their take on The Matrix.
Cool.
Not really. Pass. IDW released another book written by Ron Mars in his Ominous Press book, published kind of like label thing.
Yep.
This one featured art by Andy Smith and Michael Atiyah. It's called Demigod. And this is about an average, dumb, teenage idiot who can't get the hot girl.
Great.
Who one day after Cerebus breaks into his place of employment and rips apart his boss, he grabs a bat that has been signed by Babe Ruth to defend himself, and then it morphs into like a Herculean kind of weapon, which then melts all over him and he becomes a demigod. And it did a lot of meta things, like having when he becomes the hero at the end, he talks directly to the character, directly to the audience, and even says like, you know, like, so what happens next? Well, I turn into a hero with big muscles and a cool costume. So obviously I'm kicking somebody's ass. A few asses, actually. You want to come back next month for that, right? I'll be here. You be here. It's a date. Because my story is definitely to be continued.
That sounds slightly desperate.
So yeah, if that is a tone that you enjoy in your comic books, give Demigod a try. I read Marvel Superhero Adventures number one, which is an all-ages Marvel book.
I thought you would.
So you didn't?
No.
That's not the only reason why you didn't.
I was like, Levins will probably read this and he'll say if it's any good for children. Is it good for children?
Yes, it is great for children. Okay, and cool. It is like, and I think it's so easy to throw these kind of all ages books under the bus like we did with that recent Why the Fuck Does This Exist? Infinity some bullshit.
Yeah.
Infinity Shards book. Yes. The weird things that like they kind of tie into the movies but don't really.
Yes.
This is so much better than that. It's a really, really simple story that is about Spider-Man who gets contacted by Black Panther because Dr. Octopus is invaded Wakanda and is stealing Vibranium to make his legs stronger and Octobots stronger.
Great.
And Black Panther in this series looks just like a toy, which is kind of fun, kind of cute. They all do, actually. And then just like this fun kind of team up between Black Panther, Okoye, and Spider-Man against Dr. Octopus. And it's sweet. I don't know who did the art. It just says McCann and Brazuela. Doesn't say anywhere within the book who they actually are.
Cute, though. It's surprisingly difficult to find kid-friendly superhero comics, so it's always good to know if there's like a good one, especially Marvel. Marvel are not as good as DC.
Well, they do a lot of titles. Well, they do. They actually put out more than DC do, but they tie just into the animated ones, right? So they have a Guardians one and Avengers Assemble book, and maybe another one too. I haven't read many of those, but I would recommend this if you're looking for a really fun one and done story to give a kid who loves Spider-Man. For sure, get this. Next month we get the Spider Doctor, which is Doctor Strange and Spider-Man team up. I was going to pass the art. Check out how good the versions of the characters are.
Yeah, that's super cute.
Really good art.
Extra cute.
Yeah.
Great.
So, look, I recommend, especially if you have, I mean, pretty much only if you have a child that you want to introduce to comics, Superhero Adventures number one. And don't get Casper the Friendly Ghost and Wendy the Good Little Witch, the American Mythology number one that came out this week, because it's just a really, really badly produced comic that I don't think looks good and has been printed well or anything like that. So don't avoid that one. Nice. Get Superhero Adventures instead. Those are all the number ones that we read last week, and now we play a very fun game called Roll the... How many sided die?
Three.
Three-sided die for Marvel, Image, or DC. Thank you so much to Brad for supplying us with this very, very cool toy that helps us decide what we're going to review next. If I roll a one, it's Image. If I roll a two, it's DC. And if I roll a three, it's Marvel. And first it's Marvel. I think it always lands on Marvel first. So we're going to do Marvel, then DC, then Image.
Great.
Kick off with Marvel, who, this is surprising, very rarely happens. I read more DC books than Marvel this week.
Yeah, well, it was a big DC week.
Yeah, they put out 1,000 issues.
It really felt like that, though, friends.
Oh, boy. So what should we start with here? Infinity Countdown, number 2, written by Jerry Duggan, with art by Aaron Kuda and Mike Hawthorne. Inker Terry Pallett joining there, and colors by Jordi Belair. This is the massive kind of cosmic Marvel event book at the moment, which sees all the Guardians teaming up with Nova and stuff like that in this big scramble to get all the Infinity Stones before other bad people, like Ultron, for example, get them too.
Hank Pym Ultron.
Yeah, well, that's just what Ultron is now.
Yeah, I know.
I
just thought I wanted to remind everyone that that was a thing.
Yeah, because that happened in the one of those weird straight-to-graphic novel books that Marvel put out. They put out like 2 in 1 year. One was written by Warren Ellis. The other one was written by Rick Remender.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, in the Rick Remender one was when Ultron and Hank Pym got fused together.
Right.
Well, maybe, no, you know what happened? They think they die at the end of that, and then it turns out, no, actually, they got fused together.
It's one of the worst decisions, I think, in recent Marvel history.
But I hopefully the Mark Waid Ant-Man book will lead to them re-separating them or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, how permanent could this be?
Just kill Hank Pym. Let him die.
Yeah,
Let him die.
That's true.
Let him just be in everyone's memory as a forever bad guy. Stop dragging him through this. I thought this issue was all right, though.
This is great fun. You have Guardians of the Galaxy. Basically, there is an enormous Infinity Stone, which is like the size of Uluru on a planet somewhere. Big, throbbing pink Uluru.
Nice.
It's being guarded by Drax and a pregnant Nova Corps officer.
Yeah.
Who actually gives birth in this issue. And
yep.
It features one of the worst drawn babies I've ever seen in a comic book.
Yeah, that's a pretty...
It's a pretty 50-year-old man baby.
Although, a lot of babies when they're born
do look like old men. You're right. Especially in space. Where you had your baby.
I did have my baby. Did you just go and get a coffee and not offer me one, Wayne? Oh.
You mean like before when you said Wayne's
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to get you a coffee. Oh,
wow.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
Sorry for that. I can't believe I actually forgot to do that, though. I'm very tired, friends. I'm very tired, friends. Anyway, sorry. That was a good little interlude.
How many coffees would you not buy Infinity Countdown?
I would not buy Infinity Countdown. 2 coffees. It was fine. Oh, Adam Warlock was cool.
I think this is really fun. This is like a good cosmic event, doing lots of good fun cosmic-y things.
Very Guardians heavy.
Totally. Well, I mean, it is. It's become what their book stopped to become.
Yeah.
But the Warlock parts, especially Mike Hawthorne draws the Warlock parts. Adam Warlock's awesome.
Yeah, really cool. Super.
The eyes, very all red.
Absolutely.
I think he did the right redesign, so that makes sense. But yeah, Warlock versus Ultron at the end of this issue. It's fun. It's really, really fun. This isn't even like the main event. They keep going towards Infinity stuff.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. It's fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's fine. Cover's cool.
Cover's real fun.
Nick Bradshaw.
So the other kind of event that Marvel is doing at the moment is this weekly Avengers book called Avengers No Surrender.
Tell me what's going on.
We had the penultimate issue this week.
Great
news. In which everything is solved. It was just like, you know, like very corny Avengers don't do it to be remembered. Because a forgotten Avenger kind of bets the memory of himself against the Grandmaster to try and save the world. That's the kind of like the clincher of like how they turn the tables. It's actually done quite well. And even though it's schmaltzy, where it's like, you know, an Avenger doesn't do things to be remembered, an Avenger does things to help the world. Like, I thought overall it was done quite well with enough, you know, with the just enough poignancy that you would expect from an Avengers book. I really enjoyed this event. There's one more kind of like wrap-up issue that's going to deal with what's going to happen with all the Avengers books in the future, I guess, setting up the Jason Aaron run and what Al Ewing is doing next with the Hulk and maybe what Wade's doing elsewhere. I was into this. I thought this was fun. I would actually recommend, you know, when this is all collected or, you know, however you read longer runs, I would recommend picking this up and burning through it in an afternoon. It's really fun. It had tons of Marvel characters in it, and I enjoyed it. So well done to Wade, Ewing, and Zub. And on this one, we had Pepe Larraz and Oliver Curiel on art too.
I'm just genuinely excited for Jason Aaron's run to start.
Oh, it's so soon.
It's the most excited I've been about an Avengers book since Hickman.
But this was great. This is like the final kind of final farewell to Al Ewing's Avengers book. So US Avengers and New Avengers and Ultimates even kind of have little moments in this. So yeah, it was cool.
That's cool.
Highly somewhat recommend.
Medium recommend.
Yeah. I would not buy three copies for this this issue. Let's move to Black Panther 172, which marks the final point of year two of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther run, which ends much in the same way that the first year ended, with Black Panther and Storm hooking up.
Which is the way I would like all books to end. Yes, please. Thank
you. Just suddenly cut to Storm and Black Panther making out.
If Action Comics 1000 had ended, that would have been a much better book.
Spoilers for our review of Action Comics 1000. Black Panther 172 had art by Leonard Kirk and colors by inks by Mark Deering, Walden Wong, and colors by Laura Martin and Matt Miller. All of that creative team, artist team, are leaving the book, and we get starting with the next issue, which is a new number one. We have
Daniel Acuna,
which is so great.
I'm so excited.
He did something in the annual that came out recently. That was amazing art in that. So I think a great fit for the character.
Absolutely, and it's going to be this cool future Wakanda. I'm so down.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm so excited.
As an issue and as a kind of general arc, this is much more action focused than the first year of Coates' Black Panther run.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was quite critical of it at the time, looking back with my rose tinted glasses, I think I quite enjoyed. I certainly where it ended up the first year a bit more than this one.
Yeah, I think that this year two has been fun, but it's a bit more of a just general generic superhero book. Whereas I think with the first year, he had more that he was saying and it was a bit different, and it wasn't just like every other sort of action based book on the shelves. So this was still good fun, but I'm excited to see what he does next.
I did like that all of these issues took like a third of the time to read than all the issues in the first year did.
No way. I loved the dense political.
But hopefully we get a mix of both year one and two for the third year. I think would be good. So yeah, well done, Coates, doing a great job on this. One of Marvel's best-selling books.
Absolutely.
Still,
and I'm so excited to see him on Captain America as well.
Oh my goodness, real good. So at your recommendation, Siobhan, I've started reading The Amazing Spider-Man again.
Yeah.
I just jumped back into part three of the arc Go Down Swinging, in which Norman Osborn has become Carnage.
Yeah, Carnage Goblin.
Carnage Goblin and
Gobby Carnage.
Gobby awful, Carnage.
Awful.
That's the name of the episode, and it's all your fault.
I'm so sorry. I like this, though.
Yeah, me too.
You really want Stuart Immonen to do Spider-Man books just forever. He's so great at that sort of really dynamic action, and everything's so bright and horrible in places. But I really like this. I like all the sort of spider team getting together to take down this bigger than average villain.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of weight to it. It involves a lot of characters from Spidey's past, which I think Slott is probably very good at. He's always been good at celebrating everything that's come before it in kind of new and fun ways. We're one issue away from the 800th issue of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to be here just before it. To see the lead up to it. But even if someone that has not read the last 40 or whatever issues of Spider-Man, I wasn't that lost. It was Slott's a pretty good storyteller when it comes to kind of, I think Spider-Man more than all the other Marvel books. So it was always like, oh shit, this might be someone's first book. Quick,
a
bit of exposition in those first pages, but it never feels too tiring.
No, absolutely. And I like the character arc for so many of these people that Slott's really made good use of in his run, Harry Osborn and his whole family, and Flash Thompson we get good stuff from in this, and J. Jonah Jameson. I hope he gets a sort of cool redemption arc in the next issue.
Definitely. Yeah, that's neat.
Oh no.
Oh,
bless you.
One funny moment is when Harry's kids get stolen.
Yeah.
And someone else that they're friends with gets their kids stolen too, and they're like, our kids got stolen, mine too. And it's just what? You're not even upset.
Yeah, it's a slightly confusing vibe here. But I really liked it.
Yeah, and I guess we've got a mini gobby carnage.
Yeah.
Coming for issue 800.
It's good. High stakes, horrifying conclusion.
I like the idea of Norman Osborn getting like going like I've tried to make you a goblin so many times, Harry. You're dead to me.
Yeah.
I'm on to
taking your son.
Yeah.
Also, why would you name your son Norman, Harry? You're just asking for trouble.
Normie.
Good Lord.
Normie.
Yeah, I mean, you've guaranteed that he's going to be a fucking weirdo, but...
Yep. Final book I read from Marvel this week was Daredevil, issue 601, written by Charles Soule, with art by Mike Henderson and Matt Miller on color. Best art this series has had in a while. I really, really enjoyed Mike Henderson's artwork in this. Some fun dark stuff. Basically, Matt Murdock is now the mayor of New York.
Okay.
And it's really, really, it's really, really silly, but it's the return of extremely cocky Matt Murdock.
Okay, that's fun.
That's my favorite kind of Matt Murdock. I hate wallowing in pity Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
And in this one, he basically like comes into the office and with all guns blazing, basically, or whatever his sticks are called, blazing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's really, really, it's amusing. It's funny. I like it when Daredevil has a sense of humor about it.
Absolutely. And I think Charles Soule is like, funnier than a lot of the time his books allow him to be. Like, his She-Hulk run was really funny.
Yeah, totally. But his Daredevil book has not been at all.
No.
It's good to just see this be a lighter book and fun.
Yeah, cool.
Because it's been like almost like a borderline kind of horror book with some of, like, you know, characters getting their eyes poked out and shit.
I think it's easy for Daredevil to just shift into like really boring, dark, mopey zone.
Totally.
Because of Frank Miller. I blame.
This is a fun issue.
Cool. I read two more Marvel comics. I read Tales of Suspense featuring Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier.
Oh, wow.
Issue 104, part 5 of 5.
I thought we agreed to tap out of this after the last one.
I don't know why I still read it. Written by Matthew Rosenberg.
We had an agreement. We made a blood pact. I've got a scar on my hand, but nothing.
With art by Trevor Foreman and colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. And this is like the weird team up of Black Widow's exes trying to hunt her down. And now she's like come back as like a clone lady and she remembers everything. But there's all these Black Widow clones running around, so she kills a bunch of them. And it's like, not me though. I'm the good clone. Everyone save me. And now, anyway, it was fine.
Wait, so is there a clone Black Widow now?
Yeah, so Black Widow's just back.
As a clone? That's so stupid.
Yeah, but she has all of her memories and stuff, so it's she's just back, guys. Don't question it. She's just back.
They could have just been like, no, I'm a super spy. I faked my death.
Yeah, that would have been cooler.
Yeah.
That would have been cooler.
I got so sick of having to fight all the Avengers battles for them, and now I've
been on a tropical island for 3 months.
Yep.
Now I'm back with a tan. this was like... I think I expect too much from Matt Rosenberg, and I think this was boring, and I think this was like... the most dodgy I've ever seen Trevor Foreman's art, or at least the most like inconsistent,
right?
Like panel to panel, and I don't really think it's worth anyone's time. Speaking of not being worth your time, I also read X-Men Gold issue 26, Till Death Do Us Part, part 1, written by Mark Guggenheim with art by Michelle Bandini, colors by Arif Prianto. And I picked this up because it has the Kitty Colossus Will You Marry Me on the cover. And I've only not read like 2 issues of this, I think.
I think it's even less. I think it's like,
I've only missed like 1 issue. And it's already like the whole story is like Colossus has already proposed. They're already engaged. And they're like, oh, we're really dragging our feet with this wedding. Like, are we getting cold feet? That's the whole character. Like, that's the whole story arc. And it's just bizarre how quickly that happened, and we're all supposed to pretend like it's been ages, and it's weird, and it's not very good, and there's awkward stuff with like anti-mutant blah 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 blah, and then they like go out for a boys night for the Bucks night with Nightcrawler and Gambit, and it's just not
to hijinks ensue.
Someone like attacks Colossus in the bathroom, but he's like, it's I'm nanites. I'm made of nanites. You can't fight me. Anyway, it's fairly dull.
They took the fun out of it.
And this has happened so quickly. It's so, it smacks of like just trying to compete with the Batman Catwoman wedding, which has been like almost a year in the making. So this is just like really rushed and shitty.
Yeah, and also,
we all know Colossus is gay.
Oh,
Right. Right.
Unlike Batman.
Closeted. Yeah. Look, all of these closeted gay icons. Just let them be free and be together finally. Anyway, don't worry. Don't bother reading X-Men.
Give us the Colossus Batman wedding we deserve, yes! Marvel DC. Put your differences away to the side.
Put your differences in the closet and let the boys out.
So those are our Marvel reviews. Now we've got some DC books to talk about. We may as well start at the most crazy, the highest number. How about that? I'm trying to think of a nice thing to say about this book. It had the highest number on it.
It's out of all the books. It's the first superhero comic to reach 1,000 issues if you ignore The Phantom, which we all do.
Every single day. Action Comics 1,000, the 80-page giant, which DC threw at us last week.
Yes. Oh, and I just want to quickly say thank you to everyone who came to the Nicola Scott signing that we had at King's Comics. It was lovely. I got to talk to some nice boys who came in to say hello.
All right. You love nice boys.
I can't remember if it was Jaden or Jared, but hello.
Jor-El.
Jor-El. Thanks, Jor-El, for coming down. And Mateo, nice to talk to you boys. Anyway, signing was fun.
Yep.
This issue, less so.
How many issues did Nicola sign? 1,000?
No. We wish.
George.
Some. A couple of hundred, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. That was good.
Maybe come back next week until you do 1,000.
Yeah. God, Nicola.
I mean, Superman can do it.
She will be back for Free Comic Book Day.
Well, now I know what I'm going to ask her to do.
Sign 1,000 issues, please.
Or I walk.
Just ruin the day for everyone else.
Action Comics 1,000 is a little collection of Superman stories, short Superman stories by some of DC's top talent, including Dan Jurgens, who's been doing the Action Comics run for the last 40-ish issues. We've got writing by Scott Snyder, Tom King, Peter Tomasi, Louise Simonson, Paul Dini, Marv Wolfman, Brad Meltzer.
Only one woman.
Only one woman. Jeff Johns, Richard Donner, and then art by Olivia Coipel, John Cassaday, Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, Kevin Nolan, Kurt Swan, Butch Geis, Kurt Schaffenberger, Danny Mickey, John Romita Jr., Jerry Ordway, Clay Mann, Patrick Gleason, Norm Rapmond, and Raphael Albuquerque.
All those iconic classic Superman artists.
Letters by... No, so this was like a really strange collection of stories that...
Yeah.
Like, we've read specials recently that weren't necessarily only about Superman that contained better Superman stories.
Yeah.
I just think that, like, there were a few that I enjoyed. I really enjoyed... I don't know if it's really enjoyed or just comparatively enjoyed, but I quite liked the Brad Meltzer and John Cassaday short story about, you know the old line that Superman is faster than a speeding bullet, and it was him, was kind of like the maths of how you are faster than a speeding bullet, and when he sees the criminal's trigger finger go and how much time he has to reach before, the bullet hits the woman that he's aiming it at. I thought that was probably the best story in this for me.
It's probably the best for me because I love John Cassaday.
Yeah, well, there was some great art in this. There's also some not great art too, but let's just focus on the great. Tom King did a story in which Earth is on fire. It's the end of Earth, and Superman says farewell to Earth one last time. Like, once you get over, come on, Tom King.
Yeah.
At the heart of it, there was a good story or a good little, like, you know, tale with nice Superman moments within it.
But also a world in which he and Lois and John are all, like, immortal.
Yeah, I like that.
I didn't.
That's kind of cool that he...
Boo.
Maybe it's, like, robots. Scott Snyder did a really bad Lex Luthor story.
I genuinely can't even remember any of these stories. What was the Lex Luthor one?
He'd like stolen something that can possibly kill Superman, but convinces Superman that that's not why he's trying to convince Superman that that's not why he stole those things.
It's just, I feel like I'm disappointed by this book because it was such an opportunity to really focus on the things that make Superman great. And I don't feel like any of that was exhibited.
The best story, like as objectively as I can say, I can tell, is probably the Tomasi and Gleason one, which is like kind of like jumping through, almost like decade by decade, as of Superman's history, but they tie it into like Vandal Savage appears and like sends him back through time, and he sees all these different versions of himself and remembers, and like basically like different depending on the era that he's visiting, his powers that it's different. I mean, mostly it was just a showcase for how fucking good Gleason can be, because it's just doing full pages, no panels, just full pages, and you know, all it is about the why Superman fights and what's important to him, and I thought it was not that schmaltzy. It did a pretty good job of balancing it both.
But the narration was pretty irritating, I thought.
I thought it was fine. Yeah.
Also, where was the Lois story? No Lois Lane. It was also Lois Lane's 80th anniversary. Guys, it's not like she's a massively important character or anything.
Yeah, the main paid comic in this, the opener is like... Yeah. Metropolis kind of throwing a Superman day to say thank you, and Lois is like worked with the Justice League to make sure that all of the problems in the world can be taken care of by someone else.
Yeah, and she keeps pretending that she's on the phone to Batman as if that's the thing that Superman would be able
to hear.
No,
on the phone to Perry.
Oh, whatever.
He's pretending it's calling Batman Perry.
I don't know. Anyway, I think that this is...
The art on that story was terrible.
Yeah. I think this is like an amazing example of why they need to shift and change up the editorial staff at the Superman offices specifically. I understand they've gotten rid of Eddie Berganza, and that's like a great start, but just having such a sort of dull celebration of Superman. I think that there have been some amazing Superman stories over the past couple of decades, and you could have had any one of those people involved and it would have been a much more exciting book, but having it be so generic DC house style, I think was a bad call.
I also don't think an anthology of short stories is always the right call to make, and it's what they do so often. I think how much better would it have been if you gave a creator that hadn't done a Superman story to do, or like, you know, or hasn't done one in a while, or isn't current, to just do like a longer...
I would rather have had a full issue of the Bendis story. By the way, guys,
Bendis came, everybody. Bendis came all over issue 1000 of Action Comics.
Horrible. What a horrible image.
Yeah. Especially because he's like, he lost a bunch of weight, which I should be like, hey, good on you, but he just doesn't look right. but his story, man, is fucking shocking.
It's just like... What's the bad guy again? What's his deal? He's like...
It's like Jim Lee farted out a bunch of him. So the final comic in this is called The Truth, written by Brian Michael Bendis with pencils by Jim Lee. And one inker helping out Jim Lee meet his deadlines, which is pretty unique. But like just fighting the most generic 90s monster character.
It even looks like... What's his face? The one that killed
Doomsday.
Superman. Doomsday.
Yeah, he's kind of Doomsday-ish, but like, what if Doomsday was like a king?
Yeah. What if Doomsday wore pants?
But also, Doomsday Bendis, in his first story, Bendis makes, like, gives a reason that Superman's going to start wearing his trunks over his pants again because someone puts his pants back on or something like that, and they talk about it in like a meta way.
Yeah.
Cringy stuff. Mostly, I just hated the art on that story more than anything. I hated the character design of this guy who, it's basically revealed that he destroyed Krypton. And now he's coming for Superman to end the Kryptonian bloodline once and for all.
Yes,
but he is the most base level shitty, like, it looks like...
Rewriting history, classic Bendis-y.
But no, I mean, just like, that's very Bendis, but I just mean the actual character design.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. Yeah. It's not good. I just... I get it. I get that Bendis is a big get for DC, although I don't really get that. But it just... I wish they would give a Superman book to some younger talent. Just get some fresh eyes on the book, everyone.
Yeah.
Change it up a little bit. Do something different. Do something new.
I mean, Tomasi was that. Like, you know, not that he's particularly
10
young.
10 years ago.
But, yeah, I mean, I bet when he came, like, that was a very fresh and fun... sweet new take on Superman on the Superman arc, but it kind of, you know, it wasn't great until the end, but those first 25 or so issues were awesome.
Just give it to a woman, just for once. Yeah. Just let a woman write Superman.
Totally.
Just see what happens.
Or at least
something
make,
good might happen.
You know, you have a Superman book, make Action Comics a Lois book.
Yes, give Lois Lane a comic book. God.
Don't let Bendis write it.
Don't. Or even let Bendis write it. I was kind of hoping that he would be writing a Lois Lane book because... Like, if he did a sort of Jessica Jonesy style Lois Lane, at least that'd be something a little bit different.
With her, like, yeah, trying to, like, crack the case.
Yeah. Being drunk, being a bad mum. putting her husband in jail. Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, Jurgens did a pretty good job of kind of like sending Superman one place and having John and Lois do an adventure somewhere else. Mm. But it would be good to have a more Lois-centric Superman book. And yeah, totally all for new talent coming on board.
Please.
Superman train.
Ah, well. He's still by the Nicola Scott cover, everyone.
He's had 1,000 issues of not being written by a woman. Why not just a few of what being written by a woman?
Just one.
Just one issue? Let's keep things Superman for a while because we got quite a few super books this week. Issue 45 of Superman, the finale of Patrick Gleason and Peter Tomasi's run, came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Kent's farewell to Hamilton, which I thought happened 20 issues ago.
Yeah,
when they moved to Metropolis, but I guess they kept this house as like a holiday house.
Yeah.
So in this one, they just sold their holiday house.
Yes.
it's
an emotional time for everyone.
It was a, you know, it was a pretty sweet farewell to a lot of things that were introduced in this run, namely just Hamilton County and the country life.
Mm-hmm.
Had lots of kind of callbacks to things that had happened throughout the run, including them returning to the country fair that they were at in like issue 7 or 8, mm-hmm. which is like just a brilliant one shot. I was hoping this would reach the great heights of that issue, but while it certainly didn't come close, it was still pretty enjoyable.
Yeah.
I particularly liked that Lois brought their middle America letterbox with the American flag that says mm-hmm. Kent's on it to their trendy Metropolis apartment and mm-hmm. put it on the mm-hmm. shelf with the photos. That was sweet.
Cute.
Well, I want a story about what Lois and Clark do with the money they made off selling their Hamilton County country house.
Mm.
What are they going to do with it? Little bonus. Are they going to put it towards John's education?
Let's hope so.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty boring comic.
Make some smart investments.
Okay. All right. A banking comic. That's still more interesting than them going on the road and looking at a bunch of war memorials. So I'll take the banking comic.
Did you? Yeah. God, that was a dull issue. Did you hear about that
comic?
Two
issues.
Yeah. That was like someone illustrated the entire iTunes terms and conditions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really long.
It's really long. Fuck. Yeah.
It's supposed to be really good. Really good comic.
I'll check it out. We'll review it one day.
Yeah.
The longest episode of this ever. Super Sons issue 15 came out this week, also written by Peter Tomasi, with art by someone, Barbieri.
Frank
Barbieri.
Is that real? Did I really guess that name?
No, what the hell? It says, oh no, it's Carlo Barbieri. Sorry.
I'm amazing.
Art Thibbert, you are, but for other reasons. Photo Bunker on colors. That's an amazing name.
Good
Photo
name.
Bunker.
Got to assume that's real, right?
Imagine going, fuck, there's a tornado coming, quick. to the bunker, and then it's just a guy who can color in comics.
Yeah. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
So this is the return of Kid Amazo. Remember Kid Amazo, everyone? It's Amazo.
From the first or second arc of Super Sons. He returns, and it's actually the Kid Amazo suit gone sentient, who's come to take down Damian and John, and also the Justice League. And he succeeded in taking down the Justice League.
So now it's just Robin and Cyborg to the rescue, I guess.
That's fine. Yeah. It was a pretty enjoyable issue.
Yeah.
How many more issues has this got left? Probably like one or something, I guess. Well, this is pretty fun. I guess a fun one. Them saving the Justice League is a pretty fun arc to end on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Enough about Superman. I don't care. He's old. You know who else is old? Batman. Let's talk about Batman. We got Batman, The Creature of the Night, Book 3, written by Kurt Busiek with John Paul Leon on art duties. This is the, quarterly four-issue miniseries. That's a spiritual sequel to the very great Superman Secret Identity, in which a boy who is named Clark Kent starts manifesting the powers of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
This one, a boy whose name is Bruce Wainwright, whose parents are killed in a robbery gone wrong. He's always wanted to be Batman, and he starts manifesting a literal man, a Batman kind of monster, who fights crime and helps. I guess it's complicated to explain, but I should have left it at manifesting a monster. But basically, is either a monster or someone that's fighting crime, which is the way some people view Batman in the DCU.
Absolutely.
This book. It's so much about this character Bruce Wainwright's kind of personal journey that if it's revealed that the Batman monster doesn't really even exist at the end, which it totally won't, I would still be a really rich story.
Absolutely.
Because he has his own Alfred, and he has his own Robin, and he has his own Commissioner Gordon, but they're all drastically different to the way they're portrayed in the comics. They're not even their real names, or like they are. Like, it's like, you know, it's Gordon, Commissioner Gordon something, or like, you know, just weird little things like that. But I really enjoyed just the kind of, like, it's a mystery book.
Absolutely.
And I think...
it's like kind of a...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Psychological thriller more than anything else.
Yeah, totally. And it explores... It does a better job of exploring, you know, what makes Batman tick than, you know, Tom King's run of Batman, because it has the freedom of not being, like, you know, a Batman book.
Absolutely, and it can kind of be outside of Batman as a character and kind of analyze him like that. And it's also, I forgot what I was going to say, continue!
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, yeah, you get books like this, which we love so much, but it's also probably selling like a third of what the regular Batman book is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But these are the kind of books that will live on forever in trade.
Absolutely. This is something that I'm sure will become a total classic once it's collected.
John Paul Leon's art is just incredible. Fantastic. And we should give a shout out to whoever does the design and layout of the, I guess, Todd Klein is the letterer. I'm not sure how much him working with John Paul Leon, but the lettering in this is excellent.
Absolutely.
Really, really great layout of text and just working so well. So it really feels like you're reading like a mystery novel that's a comic as well.
Absolutely.
I love this book.
It's great. It's really, really good.
Got one more book, one more issue of this left, and there's a kind of, there's a lot of things that I want answered.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even if I don't get answers to any of them, I'll probably still be satisfied because it's been such a good story.
Yeah.
We got issue 45 of Tom King's Batman run this week. This one was written by, yeah, of course, Tom King, with art by Tony Daniel. And this was the wackiest issue that King has delivered yet.
Yeah, wacky in a, like, it starts with Green Lantern shooting himself in the head with his ring.
But then
that's pretty wacky, right, yeah, guys?
But it's like an alternate...
Hijinks!
It's an alternate reality... Right, it's a different DCU somewhere in the multiverse, in which, like,
well, it's a alternate timeline made by a Booster Gold fuck up, classic.
Yeah. So Booster is trying to give a wedding gift to Bruce Wayne, and the gift of that
his parents never died.
Yeah,
how could that go wrong?
But I so did you hate this?
Yes.
Oh, God damn it! Why?
Because Tom King's not funny and he can't write a funny Booster Gold.
Okay. I really like this a lot. Yeah.
Even I read it.
Yeah, yeah. I like just like Booster Gold just being a huge fuck up. Like, and that worked for me a lot.
Yeah. Yes, I guess. I just didn't find...
I think we need to bench you on
this
book.
It was kind of... It had like an Ennis vibe. You know what I mean? It reminded me like of The Boys, where it's like Jason Todd makes a line of tires that if you steal them, they tase you to death. Hilarious. It's hilarious. And I don't know. I just, like, the joke about, like, cutting the cheese, it strikes me as, like, a teenage boy's idea of something really extreme and controversial. You
right.
know what I mean?
Sure.
I don't think the jokes hit. There's stuff that I don't mind. And the social commentary, I think, is a little bit on the nose of, like, you know, anyway.
Social commentary?
I thought it was a little bit like the ghouls run sort of Eurasia and all this, like that shit with Duke and stuff.
It's a shit timeline. It's no good. It's not meant to be good here.
I know, but it's just...
And we're getting like, we're only getting like two, if this is like a whole new world that we're getting like a mini series out of, I get that. But it's like, I guess, yeah.
It just all struck me as very like extreme shock value for the sake of it, yeah, not for like...
Booster fucked up, Siobhan.
But Booster really fucked up everyone.
I liked it. I guess like it all, even all of his jokes not landing until the him being the kind of biggest joke of all. Like, and just completely, like, that. The joke is that he fucked up, right?
Yeah, it's a good joke.
That was funny. I like this issue.
It was, yeah. I'm clearly just a hater, and I think it's just another thing where it's just not for me, friends. I just don't like Tom King's tone.
Right. So,
I don't like his vibe.
Mr. Miracle issue 8.
Oh, yeah, I did. Did I read that or did I forget? I forgot to read that. Nice job, me. Because I picked it up and I was like, I'm going to read this. And then I was like, I don't want to read this before bed because it'll bum me out. And then I forgot to read it.
Well, it totally, this was like on the happier side of Mr. Miracle, of course, written by Tom King with art by Mitch Garrods. It's issue 8 of 12. So we've only got 4 issues left after this one. So Mr. Miracle and Big Barter have had a baby. And this one matched like every second page was, or second, you know, basically for every page of Mr. Miracle and what's the funky guy who's the babysitter?
Oh, I don't know.
Like Jumpin' Jack, the funky guy? I don't know. They call him funky. I don't know. So Mr. Miracle is like training him to become the babysitter.
Okay.
And like trying to raise their baby. And like there are lots of, you know, like just kind of like mundane what it's like to be trying to make a kid go to sleep and so lots of like you had like pages one page of that, and then on the next page you have Mr. Miracle as the high master or whatever it is, the leader of the
high father,
that's right, basically just like at war, like tearing through alien enemies and stuff like that, while on the phone to Big Barter, who's like recounting her day and what she's doing with the baby at the time and, you know, her problems with breastfeeding and all that kind of thing. I really, really enjoyed this issue. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you would have hated it.
Probably. I'm sure I could have found something to hate about it. Ah, just in a mood, clearly, guys. I haven't slept much.
Yeah, it is... It is, like, historians can go back through the podcast and find the turning point where you suddenly...
I did used to like Tom King. I liked Sheriff of Babylon. I liked The Beginning. I liked The War of Jokes and Riddles. I liked quite a lot of his Batman stuff. And now I'm just like, nah.
The Vision? You liked The Visions?
Yeah, really liked The Visions. I thought that was very, very good.
The space
very
one?
Different.
That cool space one with Kyle Rayner?
I loved that.
That was grim as hell.
Omega Man. That was Omega great. Man. It was grim, but it was like...
They weren't characters. Look at Bendis now.
He's on the back there. He's a svelte man.
He came a lot. He came the kilos right off.
Awful. He's got such a penis-y head as well. Just because he's bald. Just because he's true. Bald, friends.
So yeah. So she's not just offending Bendis, guys. Don't worry. Just all bald men.
You all look like willies. What can I say?
And penises, I guess. I thought it was a really strong issue of Mr. Miracle this week.
That's good.
Issue 35 of Aquaman will be the last issue of Aquaman. I've just like, I know we're nearing the end of this arc, but it's just the art changed again. So, you know, I loved the art that Stepan Sejic did a while ago. And then once he left, we had another one who did quite painterly artwork, which I thought suited the mood, the royal, like kind of underwater royal family vibe of this run, which is still written by Dan Abnett. And, in theory, I should still like it because it's still written by Dan Abnett, but the art was like...
It's almost as if art matters.
Yeah. This was very...
It's crazy.
But I just found that I found the writing really dull as well. Yeah. But yeah, the artwork for me was just too much of a dramatic change back to like quite 90s-esque. Like Danny Mickey was one of the inkers. And so I just don't think it's the right match for this book, and I can't read any more of it.
Fair enough. I'm just excited for Sejic to return for whatever Justice League book he's doing.
Yay.
It's going to be great.
Real fun. Did you read any other DC books this week?
Yeah. Did you read Justice League?
Oh, fuck. I forgot. I'll steal this one.
This was the final issue of...
Oh, man. I really cooked it this week.
Yeah, you really fucked up, mate.
It's almost like DC put out way too many books this week.
Or something. Written by Priest. Art by Pete Woods. This is the final issue of Justice Lost. His just far, far too short run on Justice League. I think it is... You're all bonkers if you didn't read this book, and you're bonkers for letting him slip through your fingers, DC. I hope that it means that we're going to get something else cool from Priest.
Well, it definitely is, but it would have been great to see more him on Justice League for longer, for sure.
But this was a really incredible arc, and I think he finished it off in a really nice, tidy way that was very satisfying. It used a lot of characters that he likes, so we've got, you know, really great Deathstroke in this issue. I like that he's kind of like, the Justice League, you can't fix all these problems. You can't just swan into Africa and not understand the context of what you're walking into and think that you're going to save the day. This is a complicated issue. And he takes out the fan, so that kind of just solves the Justice League's problems for them really efficiently. We get to see the hilarious lunch date between Superman and Green Lantern. What's his name? Simon Baz?
Yep.
Where Simon just assumes that he's being fired from the league, so he doesn't even let Superman say anything. He just gets up and walks away. And then Jessica, what's her face? The other Green Lantern goes to apologize to Bruce for smooching him, and Catwoman opens the door and is like, come on in and let's have a champagne. Bruce told me all about the kiss. Hilarious. And it's just like, I just think he really did a great job. He did a great job of getting, he brought in Vixen to the team. He made it so that Cyborg really felt like a leader. Gave him a strong character.
Arc end with him still as the leader of the Justice League?
Yep.
Great.
Well, it kind of ends with the league kind of disbanding. All right. We're going to get like four league teams after that. But it's just, there was so much that was great about this, from really small things like the Cyborg redesign, I think, is really strong. I think giving him like actual textured hair for the first time in maybe ever is like an incredible move, and you're only going to get that kind of shit when you put diverse creators on a book like that.
Yep.
And I'm sad we haven't gotten to see more of his Justice League run. I think that he probably has some amazing ideas in that big old brain.
Definitely. I will steal this right now and read it on the way home.
Yeah, good call. Everyone should check out that run.
Damn it.
Really, really, really should.
Keep going with those DC books. You got a bunch of them. You read even more than me, and I was complaining about how many I read.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why I read all these. I also read Batman and Wonder Woman, The Brave and the Bold by Liam Sharp with, I think, Colors?
I'll do some Irish music in the background.
Fiado Jr. Really good. You should just sing Bewitched.
Hey, nun, hey. Hey, nun, ho.
So this is issue 3 of the 6-issue series about Batman and Wonder Woman helping some fairies figure out a murder in an alternate or a sort of god universe-y thing of Irish
folklore
heroes and stuff. I like it. Levins doesn't. That's fair enough. But so this is kind of like, again, another Batman and Wonder Woman being stuck in a place where time moves more slowly, so it's fine that they're there hanging out to solve a murder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of Batman bringing his detective brain into this thoroughly non-detective logic-y place.
Right.
It's quite... I think Liam Sharp has a really good voice for both Wonder Woman and Batman. I think he writes them both really well. I think the art's really gorgeous.
That's fantastic,
really,
yeah.
Different. The colors are really moody. He draws like a really sort of handsome, pouty Batman, which I'm very on board with. And I like this. I like this a lot. I think it's just nice to have something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can pay that for sure.
So I'm definitely going to finish off that.
And are the cores in it?
Are there what now?
The cores. Are the cores in it?
Yeah, the cores are in it.
Fantastic. Yes, do it. Do it. Tell the story.
No, it's nothing that exciting. I just loved the cores as a child. Anyway.
I went to the cores school.
I did do Irish dancing though. Have I already said that?
I can't remember. Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway. I also read Batwoman issue 14. Fall of the House of Cain, Part 2, written by Marguerite Bennett, with art by Fernando Blanco, colors by John Rauch, letters by Darren Bennett. And this is the return of Alice, who is Kate Kane's twin sister.
Good
Elizabeth.
Art. Look at that art.
Great art. Really great art on this issue. And this, I don't know if Marguerite Bennett is leaving the book or if it's just kind of tying up the first couple of arcs, but we're sort of finally seeing all of the stuff from Kate Kane's Forgotten Year pay off. And
right.
It's a pretty satisfying read, and it's enjoyable, and the art's really gorgeous. So I'm going to keep reading this.
Does it tie into what's happened in Detective Comics recently at all with her?
You know, this is the first issue that I've read in a little while, so I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
But in this issue, not really.
Fuck, that art is good.
It's really good, and Alice has poisoned a bunch of bats and then loosed them into Gotham.
Yeah.
Good fun. I liked it.
That's awesome.
What did you read?
I read Injustice 2, issue number 24, written by Tom Taylor. With art by Bruno Redondo and inks by Juan Albarán. And this one basically saw like what's left of the heroes in this DC crazy alternate dark universe take on Amazo, who's been made by Dr. Ivo for Ra's al Ghul, and who's just basically laying waste to entire cities on Earth. He's currently in Delhi, just killing everybody. They unleash their secret weapon, which is Supergirl, who nobody knows exists.
Oh.
And has been trained by both Black Adam and the Amazons.
That's pretty cool.
I feel like you say this every time I talk about this comic.
I know.
It was a really, really fun issue. Just good fun. Good gags. Great use of Plastic Man. Plastic Man has a son as well. Great use of Blue Beetle.
Oh, which Blue Beetle?
Jamie. Because Ted's dead in this universe too.
Boo.
You got to kill Ted. That's how it works.
Everyone always kills Ted.
But yeah, great work from Tom Taylor on this great book. Real fun.
Oh, you mean the Tom Taylor who will be at King's Comics for Free Comic Book Day?
No, a different one.
All right.
Cave Carson has an Interstellar Eye came out this week through DC's Young Animal imprint. Issue
I didn't
number
get
two.
To this. Was it great?
Yeah, it was really fun. Issue two of this new run written by John Rivera and art by Michael Avon Waming and Nick Filade with no... what's his name?
The guy. Gerard Way.
No Gerard Way in sight. And that made the story not convoluted and not over the top, even though it's still extremely high concept, goofy sci-fi bullshit. It was really easy to follow. Basically, I can't even begin to describe the story, to be honest, but like, there's just like great moments where like Cave Carson and his, you know, team will kind of travel to a different dimension and everyone's like, oh my God, it's like, you know, this figure from their history. He's come back to us. And Cave Carson assumes they've only heard of him because they listen to his podcast. Like this book was never funny. It was like, you know, like it was quirky, but it's actually genuinely funny now.
Yeah. And I think, probably mentioned this a number of times, but I think one of the most underappreciated things about this book is the father-daughter relationship, which is one that you don't get to see that often. And I love their kind of like the friendship that they have,
yeah.
The slightly combative relationship that they have. But there's a lot of like love and understanding. I think it's really lovely.
Well, this was the best issue for that so far.
Oh man.
Really
I'll
good.
Have to read it.
Yep, take it home. Nice. Finally through DC, through Vertigo, we got Deathbed issue number 3.
This book has the most boobs and willies and lady parts of any book that
I've
read.
There was
no
boobs in this issue.
What?
No, sorry, no willies.
There's a statue of a willie.
Is there?
I mean, is it a whole
does
man?
Does it count? Does it even count?
Willy. I reckon.
Do statue dongs count?
Yes.
Let us know. SeriousIssues@kingscomics.com. Although, how good would it be if we had a dong statue that we could dong whenever it was dong watch time?
Yeah, Ben, work on it.
Ben?
Brad, fuck.
Brad the Die Maker.
Yeah.
Deathbed, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Riley Rossmo and Ivan Placencia, is about a Hunter S. Thompson kind of esque, larger than life, but also crossed with James Bond kind of figure.
Yeah, he's like a pulp hero.
Pulp hero.
Like a Doc Savage type.
Who has lived an insane life, but now, one by one, everyone that he met during his life is being killed. And he has assigned a writer to chronicle his amazing heroic life so he is not forgotten. She's basically been plunged headfirst into this horrendous world that he's entirely responsible for, because basically he fucks his way through the world and never returns for the breakfast the next morning.
What a dude.
Is that a good analogy?
Yeah.
This issue saw them, basically he's inspired a race of cannibals.
Yep.
Because he told them that you are what you eat. It was fun and gory, and Riley Rossmo are just doing incredible art. Yeah, so good. This is a really fun and silly series that I'm enjoying quite a lot.
Absolutely. Really, really enjoyable.
Great shit. Good on you, DC.
Great shit.
At least one good book in that stack.
Yeah.
Image this week saw the return of Lazarus, written by Greg Rucka with returning artist after his little art holiday, Michael Lark. They put out a mini series to give him a break from the stress of doing a month-to-month book. This also had art from Tyler Boss with Santi Arcus and Simon Boland on the book too. This basically fills in, similar to Batwoman having a year off, this fills in the gaps of one of the members of one of the main families that control the world in Lazarus. The son of the main family that we follow in Lazarus was basically kind of like ditched. Mm-hmm. And this shows where he's been. And it looks like there's going to be a time jump of 3 years until we see him again next.
Cool.
This is a very fucked dystopian future in which all of the world has been divided up into different families, mm-hmm. the wealthiest families in the world. And everyone below them either works for them or like lives outside of what's owned by the families, mm-hmm. and they're regarded as waste. Mm-hmm. In this one, we got to see the Nordic parts of the world and what it's like to live there as the sun's body is found by a bunch of Danish speaking fishermen.
Lovely.
Yeah, I fucking loved this issue. It was so good to have Lark back mm-hmm. on the art. I actually think his art has not looked this good since the book started. I've got to say
that's the most gorgeous I think I've seen the book look.
And I think a lot of that has to do with how good the colors are.
Yeah.
It was great to have this book back. Even though, like, you know, we're still not seeing anything about Forever, the Lazarus of Lazarus, who's mm-hmm. like the kind of the family's fighter, mm-hmm. who's kind of immortal in a way. This still felt like a big return to like, oh shit, you know, Lazarus is back. Mm. Really, really great book. Happy it's back. A book that I'm really enjoying at the moment had its second issue this week, and it is Infidel through Image. It is written by, where's it written? It's a name that it's very easy to fuck up, even if I read it directly. Pornsak Pichichote.
Pioche.
Fuck it.
Who could possibly know?
We should ask him. He's very active on Twitter, especially if you say nice things about his book, which is what I'm about to do right now. Aaron Campbell is the artist on this with colors by Jose Villarubia and letters and design by Jeff Powell. This is a horror book by way of a family. Basically a young mother who is Muslim living with her.
She's not even a mother. She's like a stepmom. Not that that doesn't make you a mother.
Oh, right.
She's recently moved in with her new partner, his young daughter, and her partner's mother, who has some, has had issues in the past with the fact that she is a Muslim.
Yeah, that's right. We learn that that's largely due to her now dead husband. Mm-hmm. For every like step that the mother kind of takes in trusting her, you know, would-be daughter-in-law, basically like our main character is seeing visions of horrific shit, which may
spooky faces popping up everywhere,
ghosts from the apartment that they're inhabiting.
So she accidentally stabs her sort of mother-in-law.
Well, tries to, bad news. And keeps basically like seeing these horrific visions that that cause horrible accidents to happen.
Mm-hmm.
This ends on a proper fucking scary note.
Yeah.
This is like probably the scariest book I'm reading right now.
Yeah. And it is really scary.
And it has this like, you know, really, really present kind of, you know, current day political feel mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. it that doesn't feel forced in. It makes the book seem realer.
Absolutely. And all these characters feel really genuine and like fleshed out. I love it. Even like the little kid who's like obsessed with Star Wars.
Yeah. I love that stuff too. Yeah. It's really great. It's so good having like the geeky side of the writer, like, you know, I know it gets so cringy when you have pop culture references within other mediums.
This is a situation which I think it really works.
Because the kid's saying it.
Yep.
Yep. A kid being obsessed with something is very on brand with kids.
Yeah, that's what kids like.
Infidel. I would highly recommend this. This is the start of a really, really promising, memorable series.
Yeah.
The art reminds me, it's the whole vibe of it reminds me of like a classic Vertigo book.
Yeah, or even like a Brubaker vibe. It's got sort of shades of Kill or Be Killed.
Yeah, definitely. Is it, they're living in London? Is that?
I think they're living in New York.
Yeah, there you are. For some reason, I get a. I guess because of the. It feels like an early 90s Vertigo book to me, yeah. Which I just associate with UK.
Right.
So they probably are living in New York. Really enjoy Infidel. Really great book.
Highly, highly recommend.
We got one of the final issues. We've got, I don't know, maybe there's like 10 more at most left of Descender. Was recently announced by Jeff Lemire that would be ending soon. Dustin Nguyen going on to do big two work and actually make some goddamn money for once.
Yeah, what's he doing?
I'm not sure, but he made some comments recently.
Cool.
Yeah, I read comics, not Twitter.
Nice.
I also read Twitter, but I forget everything that I read on there. But this basically has gone from a book about, you know, robots and humans not, you know, trying to exist together, and this is now just an all-out war book.
Nice.
It leads to some very different artwork from Dustin Nguyen. You still have the very intimate discussions between all the characters, but it's also allowing him to draw some incredible spaceship battles and explosions and cool shit like that. I'll have more to say on this book as the plot advances more into the final stages of the book, but I really enjoy this series.
Nice.
Final Image book is one that you read too. Yep. The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson, issue number 4, which I learned at the end of this issue is the second last one.
Oh, no.
This is the book about the once and only superhero Earth ever had, but he lost his powers. Now he's just some schlub with no job who's been convinced to sign away all of his like rights and costumes and
his likeness
to a new museum experience dedicated
run by
to
his former enemy.
Yeah. Written by Eddie Gorodetsky and Mark Andreyko, with fill-in art by Ian Churchill on this issue. And I thought the art was actually quite a step up
from
what it's been in the past. Ian Churchill, so good.
Yeah. Did you read the back matter? I just shouldn't read the back
matter. Oh, man. He is so cocky, this guy.
Like, for a man, like, basically the vibe of the whole back matter was like, so guys, I know that I'm the writer, but actually art matters too. I don't know if you guys know that, but art actually matters too.
And he's like, and I would know, I write for television as well. Yeah. And let me tell you about some television stuff. And then he drops Anna Faris's week and Anna Faris's name and Allison Janney's name. And I know that's, you know, just the his world, but it just comes across as really...
The vibe is just a dude who hasn't written comics before being like,
can you believe me with all of my all of my merits writing a book for comics?
And also,
what
did you guys know that like being the writer is the most important thing, but the art also matters. Yeah, it communicates things to you that I don't say in my dialogue. That shit's crazy.
I'm an ally to artists.
Yeah.
Anyway, the story
is
pretty
good. It's a good book.
It's a good book.
I should not read the back matter because it makes me hate this man and hate this book. But it is kind of just another book about like a white jlubby dude
redeeming
being
himself.
Sad.
Yeah. And eventually redeeming himself. But I liked here his whole life he's blamed himself for saving the life of a man but by catching him as he fell off a building, but in turn crippling him from the waist down. And he's had that on his conscience for his whole life, and we get a different spin on what actually happened from the man himself. And I thought that was, you know, pretty touching and nice.
Yeah. And I think he does a pretty good job of writing Jane, the female character in his life.
He's kind of love interest / just kind of friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. I really like I think this is a good story. It's weird that it's just going to end in one more issue, but I thought it was going to stick around for a bit longer. But if it means less back matter, although, God, can you imagine how pitiful the Batmanger is going to be on the final issue.
I'm amazing.
Yeah. Can you believe it? I did it. I wrote a whole miniseries.
I worked with an artist.
So that is the end of our Image reviews. Marvel done. DC done too. We've got other publishers left now. And it was a lot of books. I wasn't able to get through all of mine. Unfortunately, did not get to read Lucy Dreaming, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, James Bond, The Body Empowered, and Sister Spooky's High School Hell, and A Saga Yojimbo.
I read a couple of those.
Oh, that's good. But I thought we should start with the return of one of our favorite books in what I think was the best issue of this series so far.
Very, very good issue.
Fence, through Boombox, written by C.S. Paquette, who is one of the many people coming to King's Comics soon to do a signing.
Yes, she will be here, guys. You can go onto the King's Facebook page and check it out. If you're local and want to come on down, it's May 18th. It's going to be a Friday evening. It's going to be a Queens of Kings hosted event, but you don't have to be a lady to come along. But it just means that I'm going to interview her for the first hour, and we'll do some questions, and then there'll be a signing for the second hour. should be good fun.
Are you going to amplify that interview, or can I just put these mics in front of your hand and you can just record like a normal podcast?
I think we'll just be able to record it like a normal podcast because we're just doing it in the store, so it's not going to be big. And I have a carrying voice.
Great. You do?
I do.
Do you know that you are actually half the level I am when I edit the episode?
Nate is always telling me off when Otto's asleep. He's like, I know you're not shouting, but your voice just carries. And he hears you, and then he wakes up. I get really mad about it.
So C.S. Bacat writes, Fence with art by Joanna the Mad and Joanna LaFuente on colors. Mm-hmm. This is a book about a school of exclusively beautiful men, mm-hmm. young men, who are dating each other, but also fencing, mostly.
Yeah, mostly fencing.
We've kind of, you know, this is some of them are at this school on a scholarship. So if they don't win a match or make it through to the finals mm-hmm. in this like kind of fencing tournament that's happening mm-hmm. at the school during these issues, they won't be at the school anymore. We'll lose their beautiful face. But, you know, to be honest, there's a lot of beautiful faces to go around. So
yeah, absolutely.
Not really our loss. But this saw Seiji, who is kind of like the antagonist of the book, who is like this untouchable fencer who took down our protagonist in the first issue, kind of meet his match in Aiden, who is this boy that basically sleeps with everyone at the school.
Yeah, and then doesn't call them the next day. All right.
He's the heartbreaker of Fence. Yeah.
I like that every issue shows like a different kind of element to fencing, and it shows how much it's a psychological battle between two people. And Aiden uses that hilariously to his advantage.
But I just think like I've never read anything that painted a picture of why this sport is a great thing for these, like why the characters love this sport so much or are so obsessed with this sport.
Absolutely.
It does so much in the way of doing that while explaining elements of their character at the same mm-hmm. time, and this issue was thrilling as well in terms of watching them fence together
mm-hmm.
and you know, you see the scoreboard and first one of them is like decimating the other one, and then they catch up and mm-hmm. the shocked looks on both their faces and also the faces of everyone watching. This is an exhilarating read.
It really is. And the continued sort of fleshing out of our lead character Nicholas, who is looks like the illegitimate son of a world famous fencer, and he just wants to sort of prove himself to his dad, even if his dad isn't in his life
or alive.
Oh, is he dead?
I think so.
I thought that he was alive and just like had a son at a different school.
Oh, okay, right.
Or something. Anyway, right.
I'm so used to comics just being, oh no, the dad's dead.
But I love it. I love the coach. I love all these characters. I love this book.
Yeah.
So good, guys.
Me too. This issue was particularly excellent too. Mm-hmm. And the first trade, featuring the first four issues of this series, just came out.
Mm-hmm.
You will be able to get it signed at King's in a few weeks.
Yeah.
But even if you cannot get to King's, you should, like, you know, there are very few comics that we were like, you fucking have to read this one. And I really think this deserves your attention.
Absolutely.
Especially if you love, I mean, I don't know what I would compare it to, but like if you are looking for a book that convinces you that sports storytelling can be amazing.
Yeah, if you like sports manga, pick this up. If you like things like Slam Dunk or other sports manga or anything, like I think if you like manga that really hones in on a specific sort of subculture or niche.
Yeah, totally.
Like if you like sort of cooking manga, if you like Ocean Bow and stuff like that. Wine manga. Drops of God.
But yeah, this is not a manga, just in case anyone was wondering.
No, but it does have manga vibes.
Definitely. And I actually asked for a bunch of sports manga or comics recommendations in our Facebook group this week mm-hmm. and was given quite an amazing list. If you would like to share that with me, you can come and check it out at our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast. More discussions of comics on there, please.
Yes, please.
Not just making threads saying you bought something.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some issues of comics that came out through Black Crown this week. We got issue 3 of Punk's Not Dead, which is a comic written by a man whose name David Barnett, with art by Martin Simmons and letters by Aditya Bidikar, and flats by D. Kniff. This is a book about he's not Sid Vicious, but he's kind of close to Sid Vicious. He's a dead punk.
His name is Sid, who looks like Sid Vicious.
And he can currently only be seen by this one loser school kid, But he's not a he's not a loser. Like, you know, I talked about that stupid demigod book at the start of the episode. In the way that it's like, you know, he's a dumb loser who can't get the girl. What a loser!
Yeah,
and you could describe this character in the Fergal in the same way, but it's so different and so much more nuanced. And he's a, you know, he has a character that has a lot more going for him. He's just, you know, shy and seen as a loser.
He's just like an awkward weirdo with a mum who puts him in some difficult situations all the time
to make
who
money.
Has bad acne and is quiet and awkward.
What I love about this is that it's just so ridiculously British. You know, a celebration of not just punk culture, but also just like different things that you would only really get from, again, it's that, you know, early 90s Vertigo. That, that it's a subset of comics that I love reading.
Absolutely.
And there are a lot less of them than there used to be. And I think last time I reviewed this, I said that this is like the closest thing to a great Hellblazer book we've gotten since Hellblazer finished at Vertigo. Before that, because I didn't like the final 50 issues of Hellblazer. But yeah, I think this is a really, really great, great book with great art by Simmons. And I love the kind of the Ghostbusters kind of element where you have this like older woman who is kind of like a, she's like a supernatural kind of investigator.
But for the government, it's like, what would the equivalent be in superhero comics? I don't know.
S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes, but weirder.
Yeah, and she's like bawdy and crass and awful, really.
Yeah.
But in a hilariously British way.
Yeah.
Look, I this book's really, really fun. There was a little preview for what's to come in the Black Crown Quarterly number 3 that also came out this week. It looks like it's about to really, really hone in on way more weird mystical shit too, which is going to be a lot of fun. This is a really cool series. I love this book, hey.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah.
I think that and the next book that we're going to talk about have both like totally blown me away. I think the Black Crown are doing great stuff.
Yeah. So
except for that weird one, Kid Lobotomy.
Yeah. But Assassinistas, the next book
is my favorite.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it? Written by Teenie Howard with art by Gilbert Hernandez. Do you know, I realized this week, I train a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I talk about it very occasionally on the podcast. Some would say too much, others say maybe not enough. I don't know. Let us know where you fall by writing on a piece of paper and throwing it into the sky. I train with a bunch of people that I would not hang out with normally in life. I would never even encounter in normal life. And one of them is a bikini bodybuilder.
Nice.
Who I realized is drawn, like she looks like a Gilbert Hernandez drawing.
Nice.
Like tattoos and the hair and the build of a, like, yeah.
Those massive bazooka-like bosoms. Is that what you're trying to say by build?
No, everything. No, like, but also like the muscle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like she's a bodybuilder. So she goes on stage. There was a fitness expo. She goes on stage. She flexes, holds position.
Like, paint herself bronze in that really crazy way?
I haven't seen pics yet.
Okay, cool.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, you got them.
But yeah, I was like, it was funny. I was like, there's something familiar about, oh my God, you look like a Gilbert Hernandez drawing. So Gilbert Hernandez draws this book, Assassinistas, which is about three ex-assassins, or assassinistas to be exact, who they're all grown up. And they've got children. Some of them have children. Some of them don't. Some of them are still being assassins. But they're all kind of against each other right now in different ways, or think that each other's against them. The main assassinista has recruited her son and her son's boyfriend to help her on a mission. This issue got really wacky in parts.
Yeah.
They're like shooting weird robots, and you know, the boyfriend is like can't deal with killing, like shooting people, and like kind of throws up. And yeah,
there's a breakfast truck called the Breakfast Bar that's painted like a waffle.
Yep,
great.
Filled with weapons.
Yep.
There's great flashbacks it has a lot. This is just so much fun.
And it's such a, like, great, like, Gilbert Hernandez gets to have so much fun with drawing sort of 70s fashion and big hair and the clothes and the colors are gorgeous. And yeah, there's so much that's super enjoyable about this book.
And I don't know what's going to happen with any, because, like, there's almost like the stakes don't really exist in this, but that's fine. It's like it has this real soap opera-y vibe, which is what Gilbert Hernandez has in his books too, that he writes. You know, there's also lots of guns and over the top kind of assassinations going wrong and stuff like that. It's super fun. And a lot of great backstories that they kind of let you in little snippets of. There's a lot going on in this book. I really love it.
Absolutely. Teenie Howard is knocking it out of the park with this.
Go Teenie.
Go Teenie.
Quantum and Woody came out this week, issue number 5 through Valiant, written by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by Kano and Dave Sharp, featured one of my favorite lines that I read this week. And that was, okay, it's official, I hate Australia.
Yeah.
Because Quantum and Woody are stuck in Australia, trapped in the Opera House, which is being used as a doomsday device.
Fighting a bunch of, like, genetically altered marsupials. So it's like a platypus that flies with its tail and a whole bunch of crazy shit. Pretty silly.
And it involved a lot of truths about both of their real fathers. And, you know, all kinds of, you know, world domination plots gone wrong and stuff like that. This was actually Daniel Kibble-Smith's final issue of Quantum and Woody.
That was probably the one that I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, me too. Next issue was written by Elliot Rahal with new art team as well.
Oh, wait, who's Elliot Rahal?
He just does lots of Valiant. Well, the only things I've read is lots of Valiant stuff, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, this was super fun. Great jokes throughout it. Mm-hmm. I mean, any comic that ends with the Opera House exploding is okay in my book.
Yeah, absolutely.
Blow up more Australian monuments.
Yeah, blow up Westfield Tower.
All right.
Sydney Tower.
What's it called? Blow it up. Just called Centrepoint.
Centrepoint, yeah. Exactly.
Just called Centrepoint. Okay?
Okay.
Good deal.
Done.
But yeah, I thought this is a really, really fun finale and with lots of great jokes and excellent art from Kano, who is, you know, on my, like, will always pick up something that he does the art on now because I really enjoy it.
Really good fun. Really great panel layouts and stuff like that as well.
So good. Absolutely. What you got next? Siobhan.
I did read James Bond, The Body, issue 4, written by Alice Cott with art by Owen Maron, colors by Valentina Pinto.
Now, I hated the last issue, and so I was, like, really reluctant to start this one, and I didn't. Should I?
I thought this was a really great issue. It sort ends with after he shot all those neo-Nazis or whatever, Bond is trying to escape through a forest and he passes out and he wakes up in a woman's house and realizes that they are trapped inside there and there's an assassin outside who's coming to get them. And so he turns the house into a sort of assassin trap.
Home Alone.
Home Alone.
It's Home Alone.
He Home Alones it. But then the lady takes care of it anyway.
Okay.
She sees him. She sees the assassin sneaking around outside, shoots him, and is like, "I dealt with that while you were asleep, Bond." But it's kind of nice. It's more about this woman and about sort of the way that we all deal with things. And some people are better alone. Some people are better in a crowd. It's really enjoyable. I think this was after the slightly on the nose.
Slightly, sure.
Last issue, I think that this was good fun.
Cool.
I enjoyed it.
Over to Dark Horse now, and we had the finale of Vinegar Teeth, the incredibly weird book by Troy Nixie, Damon Gentry, and Michelle Madsen, about a weird alien who comes to Earth and teams up with a drunk detective.
Mm-hmm.
And then together they had to work to, like, stop the alien's father from eating the entire world. It was so ridiculously over the top. Troy Nixie is a crazy cartoonist with just insanity in his brain that he just spews all over the page.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a very silly, goofy finale to a pretty fun series. Nice. And it's always good getting some new stuff by Troy Nixie. He's an amazing cartoonist.
Really bizarre.
Yep.
Really odd stuff.
Real good.
Also, Dark Horse, I read issue 4 of Empowered and Sister Spooky's High School Hell, which involves a junk food elemental, so a giant monster made out of, like, pizza and chips and ice cream that is powered by these sort of teenagers who binge eat and then purge, which is pretty hectic. It sort of deals with a lot of, like, fairly full-on teenage girl stuff in a really funny, approachable, hilarious way. I love it. I really love this series. I find it very funny. I think Adam Warren's really funny, and I think Carlos Speed McNeil is nailing it art wise and I think that it's nice to see her art colored as well, because she usually works in black and white.
Empowered is usually black and white too, so it's a nice treat getting this, and I will be reading this immediately after the episode.
Yep. Good call.
You read another Dark Horse book?
Yep. I also read issue 2 of Usagi Yojimbo, The Hidden, by Stan Sakai, obviously, and this is a sort of more contained murder mystery, I guess, for Usagi Yojimbo, as someone who's not read much.
Well, normally they're like kind of like, you know,
two
issues or whatever, and the story wraps up.
Okay.
So this is a pretty long one for them.
Right, so this is all about a group of Christians. Christians? Christians.
Christians?
That was hard. Sorry. They,
Christianity.
Anyway, you know what I mean. Christians who have been murdered, and there's some weird stuff going on in this small town in Japan where Christians are outlawed, and they're trying to, Usagi and the chief inspector in the town are trying to find out what's going on, and it's great, and there's a really cute little
Chibi Usagi back story
in the back, which is super adorable.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Add this to the I will read this immediately after the show pile. Yep. I like the historical connections that this book has because Soggy Yojimbo really does.
Mm.
It's cool.
It's good fun.
Over to IDW now. I've got issue 3 of The Spider King, which is a book written by Josh Van with illustrations by Simone Diamini, colors by Adrian Block. This is a sci-fi meets fantasy book in which an alien spaceship crashes on... in the middle of a war between different, what do you call these guys? Viking?
Yeah.
Vikings, sure. And they basically take all the alien tech and try and fight each other with this alien tech.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of leader of these aliens bonds with some humans and he becomes the Spider King.
Nice.
And we see the extent of his powers and what horrible bullshit, like, you know, horrible violence he's brought to the land through mind control.
Great fun.
Yeah, really, really fun. Great
Such
artwork.
Such cool art.
Yeah. Definitely one to pick up if you're a fan of Headlopper.
Yeah.
And would like some more space in it.
Nice.
Because a bit of space in this. Finally, the last book we're going to talk about is the biggest book that we read this week. It's magazine format. That's why.
Absolutely.
It's The Highest House, issue number 3. We reviewed issue 2 of it last week, and for some reason, issue 3 came out 1 week later.
I'm into it.
Yep. Written by Mike Carey with art by Peter Gross, colors by Fabian Alquire.
Covers by Yuko Shimizu, who you should all buy this just for that cover.
Yeah, the covers are so good, aren't they?
So gorgeous.
And I love that they're like embossed on certain parts of the artwork.
Shiny.
Real shiny. So this is about a boy who is taken from his family to become a servant at the highest house in all the lands that overlooks the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
In this, the richest place in
sort of medieval era place.
Europe-ish. That general vicinity.
Yeah.
He has aligned himself with a supernatural being who is entombed in a stone
called Obsidian
beneath the highest house, and they've made a pact to help each other out.
Seems like it's probably a bad call, bro.
Because it seems kind of evil. Like, look at the font that he's typed in.
Yeah.
Pretty evil font. Mm-hmm. But basically, this sees him kind of like through teaming up with this big rock who is able to kind of make things happen within the highest house. This sounds ridiculous, but it works so well. It's a very, it's quite a dry, serious book, but it's great storytelling. But he's kind of allowed the boy to kind of work his way further and further up the highest house at one point in this issue. He's even offered freedom. As a slave, but has to turn it down because of the deal that he's made.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on in this book, and I think this could end up being quite an epic story.
Yeah, it's incredibly engrossing, and it's like it's a lovely sort of, it's really beautifully presented book. It's really nice to read month by month.
Yes.
And it's constantly engaging, really interesting, really different to everything else on the stands at the moment, I think.
I
love this book.
Really, I highly recommend picking this up if you can still find copies. If not, I'm sure the oversized first trade will be available quite soon.
Yep.
So that's The Highest House, the last issue that we're going to review on today's show, which is entitled Gobby Carnage, remember? Siobhan,
no.
I'm going to try and make you remember to do this at the end of every episode.
Oh, yeah. Sorry,
we have to pick our favorite comic. Our favorite comic from what we reviewed this week. I'm going to go with Fence, issue
Damn
number
it.
5.
Okay.
Right. It's okay. You can say the same thing as me.
Okay. It's either Fence or maybe Assassinistas.
Two very good ones. Definitely.
I'm gonna go with Assassinistas.
Okay.
Nice.
You love being different.
I love being different.
So the picks of the week for Serious Issues this week, and I should not say picks of the week because that is what another comic book podcast calls their pick of the week.
Oh, really?
I'm sure they've copyrighted it. We're going to get sued, Javon. We're fucked.
Oh, fuck. All right. See you later, guys.
But it was great having all of the episodes so far. But anyway, Fence, issue 5, and Assassinistas, issue 4. They're our...
best fucking comics of the week.
I love it. Rolls right off the tongue. So thank you so much for listening. If you want to find us online, we are facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. Or you can support the show by heading to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. We've got a bonus episode coming for you very, very soon.
Good.
Yeah, pretty cool of us to do that.
Yeah.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are serious_issues or individually at Siobhan CBG or at Levdog.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you... put in your diary, the first Saturday of May is Free Comic Book Day, and we will be celebrating at King's Comics in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street. Both of us will be highly involved on the day. Mm-hmm. I'll be walking up and down the main line, doing trivia, giving out prizes, just being the friendly face on the outside, and inside you get the grumpy face of Siobhan.
Hey, all right.
Stressed out more than she ever is throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah. It is my most stressful day of the year, which is kind of funny being able to just say that.
But you've put together probably the best lineup of creators that Kings has ever had this year.
And I reckon.
It's super exciting. Again, that's Tom Taylor, Nicholas Scott, Andrew Constant, Dean Rankin.
Paul Mason. It's going to be good.
Can get some comics signed and some free comics and then buy a whole bunch of stuff because there's a sale on too.
Yes, please.
Super fun shit. See you at King's Comics on that first weekend, first Saturday of May.
I can't wait.
And I can't wait even more.
I can't wait because then it'll be over.
See you soon, everybody.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.